and welcome to the FT Advisor podcast. Each week, we'll be joined by guests from the financial services world to discuss the most pressing industry issues. I'm Amy Austin, news editor at FT Advisor, and today I will be discussing small pots and the pot for life concept with Kate Smith, head of pensions at Aegon, and Tom Selby, head of retirement policy at AJ Bell. So first things first, welcome to you both, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Well, so back in July, the DWP said it will work to encourage consolidation to solve the problem of small pension pots. But then Pensions Minister Laura Trott said the longer term solution to this issue would be to move to an Australian style pot for life system, which is where, you know, a member would keep the same pension pot when they move their jobs. So, Kate, maybe we can start with you. Are you an advocate for pot for life method, or do you think that consolidation might be better?
So I'm a little bit on the fence, but I would lean more to consolidation, a different consolidation model, rather than pot for life. I think consolidation is more of a natural way of doing things under the auto-enrolment proposals just now. Pot for life is an interesting concept, and obviously we're going to be exploring that a bit more. Some people already use that now, but we know not many employers support it. So I'd say I'm more towards consolidation and going down the value for money type route.
Sure. And Tom, what about you?
Intuitively, I like the idea of people being given more choice. I'd say I'm sceptical at this stage about some of the practicalities around making pot for life work. So as it stands, the government saying that it wants people potentially in the future to be able to either retain their existing pension scheme or choose a different pension scheme when they go forward with their retirement pot, that kind of makes sense if you can make the practicalities work. I think the challenges around that are building the ecosystem that you would need in a way that doesn't push too much cost onto employers. We know lots of employers at the moment are struggling. Lots of employers will feel that the cost of pension provision is actually quite high. And if you're going to load on extra regulation and potentially extra costs onto those employers as well, then I think that's really, really challenging. So I agree with some of the problems that some of those who advocate for pot for life have laid out, that there is the disconnect between employees and the pension scheme that's chosen on their behalf exists, and in theory pot for life could help to address that, but I think there are challenges in delivering it, and I wouldn't want to see, I guess, chasing one dream in pot for life distract from important things like pensions dashboards, which still need to be delivered.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the DWP said kind of, you know, pot follows members, that kind of thing, risks like situations where a saver would take a pension from a well-performing scheme into a poor-performing one when they move jobs. Kate, is this kind of, you know, its main downfall, do you think?
Well, do you know what? That's what we said 10 years ago. We were very concerned about that would happen, and it would be higher charges and poorly performing, et cetera, et cetera. All of that. But we're actually in a different environment now. Workplace pension schemes are really competitive in every way you can think of, the really good ones. We've also got the value for money framework, which at some time will be implemented, which will get rid of the poorly performing schemes. And, you know, I'm really passionate about this, that everybody should be able to save in a scheme that provides value for money and good retirement outcomes, you know, basically using inertia as much as you can with engagement on top. So in the future, I think portfolios member could work really well, because schemes will all be value for money. They'll all be RAG tested and put their results on websites, and we'll have the dashboard, and the dashboard will be able to use some sort of, we'll be able to expand on some sort of finder technology to help with all that portfolios member. But there are issues with it. The biggest issue I've got with about this consolidation type thing is that the cost of transfers at the moment is far too high. So you've got lots of transfers going all around the market. So there's the investment angle as well. But the actual cost of administering transfers is far too high. So that's got to come down. So absolutely nothing touches the side. And it happens really easily with all those protections in place, obviously. So I think portfolios member should definitely be still on the table. So I was really surprised that it seems to be off the table, according to Laura Trott.
Sure. And kind of, Tom, what do you think with, you know, my thing with Pots Follows members is people are lazy. So you could have, you know, one workplace pension, and if it follows you, that you might never ever change provider because you just think, oh, well, it's there. Do you think that's kind of a problem as well, that people actually might not shop around because it's just there?
Yeah, I agree to an extent with what Kate was saying there, that value for money clearly in modern workplace pensions is much, much better than it used to be in the past. I'm slightly nervous about suggesting that we're now at the point in time where everyone gets good value for money all the time and everything works perfectly well. I think everyone knows that the difference even in 5 or 10 basis points of charges over someone's retirement will actually be huge. And under automatic enrollment, you could be in a 75 basis point scheme or you could be in a 30 basis point scheme. So actually there is the risk of auto consolidation to me still does exist, albeit in pounds and pence terms, not to the extent it would have done, you know, a long time ago when charges were much, much higher. But I don't think that's something that you can say is no longer a concern anymore, because there's variations in charges and there's also variations in investment performance as well. And I think from a consumer outcomes point of view, but also I guess from the challenge of liability, if someone is, even if they're moved from a pretty low charging scheme to one that's slightly higher charging, then if that results in their pot being eroded by thousands of pounds over the course of their lifetimes, then who's responsible for that, and where does the liability lie? So I think I agree with Kate to the extent that there are the problems associated with that aren't what they would have been in the past, certainly if you think about 30 years ago to the difference in charges and things. But I don't think it's something that's necessarily we can completely ignore and say every scheme is fine, because I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Tom. I'm not saying it's the case now for every single scheme, because we obviously know it's not. But I'm thinking of when the value for money framework comes in and when it applies to all workplace schemes and all retail schemes, then we'll be in a much better position. And part of all these Mansion House reforms, an awful lot came out on the same day, didn't it? But naturally, things should be in an orderly manner. So some things are more important and improve member outcomes more than other things. Also, some things will be dependent, some of the delivery framework will be dependent on other initiatives, such as the dashboard. If we got that delivered, that would help with the small pots, as with the value for money stuff. But the critical issue, I think, with the small pots problem is a lack of engagement. That's why we've got small pots. People don't really follow or are interested in their pensions, particularly ones when they're tiny. So asking people to do more, take more control at this stage, I just don't think it's going to work, because this is one of my major issues with Pot for Life. You know, who's actually going to choose their Pot for Life? It'll be those people we already know they're engaged and have some sort of research or advisor, you know, available to them.
Yeah, and I mean, we're also like looking at lowering the AE threshold and age and all of that at the moment now, which is only probably going to make the problem that little bit worse, because you're going to have, you know, more people now coming into auto enrolment, more small pots being made, especially if, you know, while it's good that, you know, people are going to be encouraged to, you know, save into a pension at 18, you know, at 18 I was doing, you know, a little job, you know, whereabouts, like, so I'd have a pension there, then into my career, then, you know, all the ones that I'd have during university, all of that. So are we ever going to solve this small pots issues, or are we just going to keep like rolling on the longer
I think it slightly depends. So the obvious answer is I don't know. it slightly depends on the definition of solved, I suppose.
Yeah.
So there is an argument to say that if you were to create pension dashboards in the way that they've been envisioned, and you end up with dashboards which show everyone's retirement pots in one place online, does that solve the problem? There's lots of pots all over the place. No, but does it mean that everybody has the option to see where all their pots are and then can make a choice about consolidating them at retirement if that's in their interest? Then that does put them in that position. Now then the question is whether or not the solution is deemed to need to be that everybody automatically has all their pots consolidated in one place for them through inertia or all the rest of it, or whether you just give people the tools to know what their pensions are worth and then to be able to make ideally a simpler decision as possible to consolidate them with the provider that they want to consolidate with. So it's a question, I guess, of degrees of how far you want to go with that reform, and the timescales that you're looking at as well. I think dashboards are, you know, imminently deliverable. A lot of the hard work's already been done. When you're talking about, you know, Pop for Life, for example, creating a whole new piece of architecture, yeah, which nobody's decided exactly what it's going to cost or when it'd be delivered or what the weight of responsibility on employers would be. I think you're looking at something that would be probably far into the future.
Yeah. So do you think maybe then we should... Well, the government, not me personally, the government should kind of look at dashboards first then, because they've pushed them back yet again. So should we do that first and then maybe revisit this?
Yeah, it's quite, I think the whole process is quite frustrating. It feels like we, you know, some, you know, the idea of Potfellows member, for example, was first discussed, I think it was back in 2010, 2012, something like that. And we've kind of gone on this circular route back to that again. And I was thinking about it this morning, actually, and it's obviously a completely different scale and it's a completely different issue. But we've seen recently the government had HS2, this huge infrastructure project that lots of people expected to happen, that lots of people relied on long-term government thinking to make happen and made decisions around. And we've just seen the last leg of that be cancelled. Yeah. Now, whatever your politics, that's not great for investor confidence in long-term UK projects. Now, in pensions, the dashboards are as close as we've probably got to something along those lines. It's something that generally, I think, has consensus, that there's been lots of goodwill involved in trying to build. You know, the ABI and ABI members, we're not an ABI member, but ABI members have played a central role in building, you know, the rules around that. Lots of money spent on it, lots of human capital spent in building that up as well. And so I think making sure that project goes through to fruition is actually incredibly important, not just because I think it would be a good thing for people because it gives them better information, but also when the trust between industry and government in working together on long-term projects, I think, is really, really important.
Yeah. Kate, do you have anything to add there?
Well, I absolutely agree with what Tom's just said there. And I am a little bit concerned because at the Labour Party conference yesterday, I think it was Rachel Reeve, said that they would review all the major government projects. And now I'm really immediately thinking, oh my God, dashboard, don't pull it off again. Please deliver this. Because we actually need this now, don't we? Because lots of the other policy changes are sort of dependent on this. So we need it. Consumers need it. We need to start talking about it and get them to use it. We also, as Tom said, need to make it as simple as possible, not only to access it, but to understand the data. And later on, provide we've got all the protections in place to allow people to consolidate their pensions much, much easier if that's the right thing for them. So, yeah, I'm definitely believe in the dashboard. I've been a long-time supporter of it.
Yeah, definitely. I do wonder if the government, and I appreciate we're at a certain stage in the political cycle now where there's a desire to announce lots of new stuff, but focusing on one thing at a time for a, you know, department like the DWP when it comes to pensions, building pension stuff, to me would seem quite sensible to say we're going to build pensions dashboards. Oh, and we're also going to build this, or you know, commission this whole new consolidator to be built at the same time and then manage those two projects simultaneously. In an ideal world, that could be made to work. I think, you know, history tells us that generally, you know, governments can struggle when it comes to building big things, and it's there's a lot of moving parts there, and actually focusing on one thing at a time where you can, to me, would seem like a much more sensible way to go about things.
Yeah. And do you think there's kind of an argument there for, you know, with this whole consolidation stuff, that maybe it is just, you know, schemes and advisors and that, and like employers kind of getting together and maybe just, you know, having a workplace thing and being like, do you know what, this is how you consolidate a pension and this is how easy it can possibly be? Because I feel like a lot of people, if you went to, you know, the average Joe on the street and said, do you know how to consolidate your pension, like, they actually wouldn't have any idea what you're talking about, where it's actually pretty simple thing to kind of do and look at.
Yeah.
And that could solve the problem, really.
Yeah, I mean, possibly outside the FT's offices, there might be one or two who know that. Yeah. I suspect the average person would look at you blankly with a little bit of dribble running out if you mentioned pension consolidation to them. So, I think engagement is the best way to solve this, you know, any of those problems around, you know, moving people from high quality scheme to low quality scheme disappear if somebody makes an active choice to do that. I think everybody in an ideal world, would like to see more people making better informed active choices. I think it's why the FCA and the Treasury's work on the Advice Guidance Boundary Review is really important. I think at a broader level, ultimately, we're in a world now where the majority of people keep their money invested through drawdown in retirement. So whether engagement happens in your 20s or your 30s, whether it happens at the point of consolidation or whether it happens at the point where you're turning your pot of money into an income, we do need people to engage at some point in time. Inertia has been an incredibly successful tool in getting more people saving something for retirement. But I fundamentally believe that you can't keep relying on inertia into retirement if the majority of people are going to keep their money invested and take a flexible income through drawdown, because it just doesn't work. So the question is the extent to which you try to get people engaged, how early you do it, and how much you keep using inertia to help people consolidate pots and build pensions and all the rest of it. And I think that's one of the big challenges that everyone's looking at the moment.
Yeah. And what do you think, Kate? Because I mean, I know if someone kind of sat me down and was like, this is why you should move your small pot, because, you know, it's going to be eaten alive by fees, for example. If someone said that, then I'd be like, oh my God, move it now, quick, you know, get it out of the way. Do you think that, you know, showing people may be a good method?
Yeah, I think it's all about making the process easier, because we know through pensions awareness week month that this is almost the number one question, is that how do I bring my pension pots together, or how do I find them? Similar sort of question. So people are interested in this, and obviously this is the engaged, semi-engaged people who are aware that they've got more than one pension, but they don't want it lost somewhere in the ether. You know, they want to bring it together. But how do I do it? And I do think there's an awful lot of work that needs to be done to make the whole process easier and make the costs more efficient for providers as well, and to allow providers, to give members that support. So it's changing systems, processes, helpful guidance, and using an advisor when there's big pension pots with very complicated structures. But also, you know, it's also about making sure that people make the right decisions for them. You know, one thing I'm really worried about is that people just move their money into higher charges schemes. It's sort of informed because they're doing it themselves, but they don't actually understand they've moved from a low charge in, say, workplace scheme into a higher charge type retail type scheme. Which hasn't necessarily offered the wider range of investment options, which so it's not necessarily a SIPP type thing or anything like that. And so people don't have the awareness of what actually to look out for, or what benefits might be lost. You know, we've got all that complication to do with the normal minimum pension age, which we don't want to talk about today. But it's all of that, you know, so it's hugely, hugely complicated. So, but I think providers need to be given the tools to actually help the members more. So this is where the FCA's, you know, review of the advice and guidance boundary could really help there. I think it would be really pivotal, really a game changer in the workplace market, you know.
Sure. Yeah, no, I think, you know, I think we can keep coming back to it, but I think the main thing here might be, you know, timing, because we've got so much going on. Like, you know, the FCA is doing its thing, the DWP is doing its thing, you know, government's doing another thing as well, you know, so it's so many different things. Tom, if you could, you know, not necessarily put them in an order, but what do you think, you know, should come first? Because, you know, we keep talking about small pots and I feel like we've been talking about it for years, but is it the most important thing right now that needs to be done, or are there other things, you know, maybe we could take a backseat on this for a little bit?
I think a lot of this stuff is reasonably long term, and so I've always, as long as it gets done, I'm reasonably relaxed about timings. Having said that, you know, the dashboards were first supposed to be introduced in 2019, and we're now talking about 2026. So perhaps I need to be a little bit less relaxed about timings. I think the most important thing with dashboards is that they are built in a way that works, where there's any risk of it being infiltrated by fraudsters, or the information people being given is wrong, is totally removed. There's absolutely no point in rushing something to launch and then it not working properly, or people's confidence in it being dented. So I think that's the most important thing. I think, I guess, expanding automatic enrolment in terms of getting contribution rates up is probably the most important thing, yeah. but given, you know, where we are with inflation and all the rest of it, I think there's a real important decision for government to make in terms of the timing of doing that. And I think we're still waiting for confirmation on when we're going to move from 8% of band earnings to 8% of total earnings. But I think I'd say that's the highest priority thing. But when to do it is the challenge.
Yeah. And what about you, Kate?
Well, yeah, I've thought about this a lot. So I think dashboard definitely by 26. Hopefully before that, you know, with all our schemes providers joining up. We're not totally sure when members will have access to that. But along the way, auto enrolment, definitely 2017 reforms. I think they should be implemented by 2025, whether it's April or October, I don't really care. But also start those conversations about auto enrolment versus 2.0 now, because we know that policy takes years and years to implement. And I don't expect that to be implemented till 2030 at the earliest, but start the conversations. But also progress with value for money alongside. There's still a lot of stuff to be done before anything can be implemented. And right at the very end of that, small pots, because as I said earlier, some of these initiatives will actually help dealing with small pots. Others will bring more in, you know, expansion of auto enrolments bound to bring in more small pots. So I think it's that really. Look at what actually is going to make the biggest difference to retirement outcomes first. And obviously that's auto enrolment is number one. And then you've got the tools around it, dashboard, value for money, which will help better retirement outcomes as well.
Brilliant. Well, now I guess we just hope that there's no clangor in the autumn statement that puts all of this out of joint. Well, Kate, Tom, thank you so much for joining us this week. Tune in next week where we'll discuss other goings on in the industry.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Here at Bellingcat, we get to the bottom of things. From a global crisis to an underreported event, we find the facts using publicly available tools and resources, uncovering what is hidden on and below the surface. We connect the dots using social media posts, satellite images, and public records, and empower others to do the same by sharing how we do it. The ability to do so is only made possible by our readers, supporters, and community members. Care to join us? Learn how at bellingcat.com.